This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had a be everyday grind.
Night transmissions.
Well, here we are, with what will become our regular fare of ghosts and demons, murder and mayhem, and a taste for bloody revenge. And, just now and then, mind you, a bug-eyed monster from deep space. The first story up is from The Inner Sanctum, a show that took its name from a popular series of mystery novels, Inner Sanctum Mysteries, which were sold widely and advertised on the show. The Inner Sanctum debuted over NBC's network in January of 1941. Produced in New York, the cast usually consisted of veteran radio actors with occasional guest appearances by such Hollywood stars as Boris Karloff, Peter Lorre, and Claude Rains. In 1948, The Inner Sanctum was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. Tonight we have a show from July 5th, 1948, called Death Demon. I told you there'd be demons.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host, inviting you through the gory portals of the squeaking door for another soiree with some super-duper supernatural personality. And if you've never met a super-duper supernatural personality, aren't you the lucky one? Because they're devitalized people, usually somewhat dead, with transparent complexions and morbid imaginations. Would you like to become one? You won't have to worry about the high cost of living. And you'll never have to worry about dying, because once you're dead, that little matter will take care of itself. But why don't I become one? I've got news for you. I am.
Tonight's Inner Sanctum mystery, Death Demon, was written by Milton Lewis and stars Everett Sloan in the role of Howard with Ann Seymour as Gilda, and is presented by the Emerson Drug Company of Baltimore, Maryland, whose registered pharmacists compound Bromo Seltzer, the headache product that fights headache three ways. Bromo Seltzer helps the pain of a headache quickly and pleasantly, and also helps the jittery nerves and stomach upset that may accompany a headache. No wonder in a recent representative nationwide survey, druggists report that of all headache products dispensed at their fountains, the overwhelming favorite is Bromo Seltzer.
All right, friends. Let's stop all this ghoulishness and let's get grim. Now remember our rule. Don't jump out of the window unless it's open. Ready now. Then listen as Howard Ryan tells us his strange story.
The wind was rising when I returned to Greystone Farms late that night. The house with its Victorian gables and towers looked like a clawing hand reaching into the scudding clouds. I went directly to my room, even though the living room was lit up. I had no desire to see my stepmother or the man she had married. The moment I got into my room and turned on the light, I gasped. My things had been disturbed. Many of them were gone. I ran down to the living room.
Come in, Howard. We want to talk to you.
I looked at this young woman, not more than 10 years older than myself, whom I called Mother. In the flickering firelight, she looked more beautiful than ever. But he was there, too. And I felt his voice cut across the room.
You needn't stare at her like that, Howard. She didn't take those things out of your room.
Who did, sir?
I did. Please stop this absurd trick of calling me sir. Do you like it or not? I'm your stepfather.
I'm sorry, sir, but my manner of addressing you is the politest I could think of.
Please, Howard.
Where are the things you took out of my room, sir?
Here.
You had no right to take them.
I told him to.
You?
For your own good, Howard. We were worried about you.
Were you really?
You've been ill. You know what the doctor said. What we found in your room justified all our fears. How long have you been reading these horrid books?
Ever since my father was murdered.
What do you expect to get out of them?
Perhaps, sir, I expected to find some way of reaching my father.
You know that's nonsense.
Is it?
Books on witchcraft, necromancy, morbid rubbish. I gave you credit for more intelligence, Howard.
This brooding about your father might destroy your mind.
And why should you care about that, Mother?
Because, I'm fond of you, Howard. I'm not your real mother, I know, but I tried to be one to you when your father was alive. I want to help you now.
Help? Then why don't you try to find out who murdered my father 2 years ago?
The police are doing everything they can. You think I've stopped trying?
Yes, Mother. I don't believe you even care who murdered your former husband. All you care about is him.
Now, see here, Howard.
It's true, I know it. I'm not a fool. The only reason you permit me to stay in this house is because my father's will compels you to take care of me, or you wouldn't have a penny of income.
Howard, you're hysterical. Can't you see what these books have done to you?
Perhaps you'd like to see what they've done for me, sir.
What are you talking about?
This morbid nonsense. What if I tell you that some of those things are true?
They can't be.
Someday I'll be able to talk to my father and find out who murdered him in his sleep. Perhaps I might be able to do it right now.
Right now?
You're frightened? You wouldn't like to see him again. This man you loved so deeply that you remarried a year after his death.
Stop it, Howard. Stop it.
And you're frightened too, aren't you, sir? And with good reason. I don't think you'd care to meet this man whose wife you stole.
Howard!
Would you like to see him?
I'm not afraid.
Then perhaps I shall make him appear.
What are you saying, Howard?
Do you know where I was all day, Mother? At my father's grave. And look, this earth! I've brought some of it back. This earth that's now mingled with his remains. Listen. That's Dane, my father's dog. Animals know when the dead are near. This time it will work, I'm sure. The signs are right.
What are you going to do?
Throw this earth into the fire and follow an ancient ritual to set loose the chained spirits of the dead. There!
Howard!
Did you see how the flames leap up, Mother?
The lightning struck that tree and knocked a branch through the window.
You're wrong. It's my father. Father! Where are you? Father! They didn't believe me, but I knew that at that moment my father came back to this earth. They were terrified, both of them, though they tried not to show it. That night I went to my room, listened to the storm howl itself out. But there was no further sign of my father. I must have slept, perhaps dreamed, because I heard a voice I hadn't heard in 2 years. I recognized it, still thick with the accent he had acquired from his boyhood in Europe.
My son, wake up and find the person who murdered me. Wake up, my son, wake up.
The next thing I knew, I was rubbing my eyes. My room was full of mist, tinted a strange yellow gold by the murky moonlight that filtered through the windows. My father's dog, Dane, was tugging at my leg. He was trying to lead me out of the room. I followed him through the halls of that huge silent house to my father's study. It had been locked up since he died, and no one ever used it since. But when I tried the handle this night, The door opened, as though being pulled by some unknown force. Mist and moonlight crept into the study, lit the dust and cobwebs and shadowy furnishings with an eerie light. And then something crashed. A broken vase with a tiny key among its fragments lay on the floor. It might have been Dane who knocked over that vase, but I don't think so. I picked up the key. The moment I had it in my hand, I remembered a scene from my childhood. I had secretly observed my father remove a book from one of the cases, take out this tiny key, and open a hidden panel in the bookcase. Like a man in a dream, I repeated the action. I removed the book, and there was the secret panel. I opened it with the key. There was nothing in it but a few large notebooks. I took them out, opened one, and by the flickering yellow light of my match, my father came back to me.
In this journal, I record thoughts that, if they remain unexpressed, might drive me mad. I know now that my wife, Gilda, is seeing another man. I know his name. Dale Barton.
What do you want, Mother?
Just to see you. I've been worried about you.
Really? Why?
You've been locked in this room for the last 2 days. Here, I have brought you some food.
Thank you. Where is your husband?
He had to drive to town. Howard, you can't go on like this.
You love him very much, don't you?
I wouldn't have married him if I didn't.
You love him more than you love my father?
Please, there's no point in discussing this. Your father's dead, and that's all past.
Not quite dead. In fact, he's very close to us at this moment.
Close?
Yes. So close that he can reach out and touch you.
Howard, let go of my hand.
You don't believe me, Mother.
This is all nonsense.
Is it? What would you do if I told you that my father is holding your hand this very minute? What would you do if I told you that he has taken possession of my body?
Howard, you're ill. You don't know what you're saying.
Did you know Dale Barton before my father was murdered?
No. I only met him after your father died.
You lie.
That's his voice.
You have been seeing Dale Barton for months. I know. I followed you.
No. No.
I talked to you about it the day before I died. You swore he meant nothing to you.
Let go of me. Let go.
Did you kill me?
No. No.
Answer me. Did you murder me? You once said you hated me.
Let go of me. Please.
You said you loved me even on the day I was murdered.
You're hurting me.
Did you murder me? Was it because of him? Tell me.
Help me. He's going to murder me. Help me. Stop it.
Girl, you crazy fool. What's going on here?
Dale, help me. He wants to kill me.
Howard, let go.
No. She's mine.
No.
No.
Dale. Oh, Dale.
Come, Gilda. I'll take you out of here.
He led her out of the room while I lay on the floor. Had she murdered my father? Had he? I knew at last I had the means of finding out. There were thick vines outside my window, and late that night, as I had often done when I was a boy, I carefully, quietly climbed down them, stopping at a point outside their window. I clung to the wall like a bat, and I heard them talking.
Did you hear his voice?
You don't actually believe.
I don't know what to believe. He looks so much like his father. When he seized me, he spoke to me, it was his father.
Gilda, you're being foolish about this.
Am I? On the day William was murdered, Howard was away at college. How could he have known what we talked about? And he did know. That boy seemed to know every word. That boy, or is he his father?
Gilda, do you know what you're saying?
Yes, this isn't an ordinary thing. There's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, yes, there is.
I climbed back to my room to think. I dared not go to sleep because I knew my father had been murdered in his sleep. And if they had murdered him, they'd certainly have an excellent reason to kill me. I thought of running away, but then I would never find out. I know now why I couldn't run away. My father within me was holding me there. I lay down on my bed to rest. And then suddenly, I found myself dreaming that a pair of powerful hands were clutching at my throat. I struggled, gasped for breath, tried to scream. I was being murdered in my sleep, just as my father was. I tore at those iron fingers, clawed at those hands that were cutting off my life. And then I opened my eyes and discovered that it was not a nightmare. I hadn't been dreaming. It was real. I was being murdered.
You are listening to Inner Sanctum.
Well, friend, your breathing spell is over. Now it's time to lose your breath again, so let's get back to our story. Now, what did we do with the call? Oh, yes. We were interrupted while we were making one. And if you remember, the corpse belonged to Howard Ryan, the young man who was telling us this story. He had just discovered that his dream had come true, and someone was choking him to death. That's a nice way to wake up from sleep, isn't it? Well, let's have Howard tell us what happened.
My eyes focused through the haze, and I recognized Dale, my stepfather. They were his hands that were around my neck. Suddenly, I heard Dale bark, and the door flew open, and like a writhing cannon shell, the dog flew through the air at the throat of my stepfather. The moment later, I felt his hands release me as he shouted.
Come on, Howard! Just kill me! I can't get...
For a moment, I did nothing. I knew I wanted him to die. But I still wasn't sure if he had killed my father. I suppose I was a fool, but I yelled...
Yes.
Dane! Stop it! Down, Dane! Down! Here, Dane! Come here!
What? Who opened the door? I want to get out of here.
Not yet.
Why? Are you going to turn that dog loose on me again?
Perhaps.
You want to kill me?
You tried to kill me.
Kill you if you lost your mind completely.
I woke up with your hands around my throat.
You're insane. I was trying to pick you up from the floor.
You're lying!
I'm not! I heard you moaning and screaming, and I came up to see what was wrong. I found you on the floor. You were having a nightmare.
Was I?
Of course. Why should I want to kill you?
Because I may find out how you murdered my father. What he said could have been true. I had had little sleep for a long time, and his attack on me could have been a nightmare. I could never be certain. But to protect myself, I kept a gun with me at all times. I read and reread the journals of my father, which I had found. More and more often, it was his voice that came out of my mouth, his thoughts that filled my mind. And then came the night when I found out the truth.
Good evening, Howard.
What are you doing in my room, sir?
I came to have a talk with you.
Dane! Dane!
There's no use calling for your dog. You'll never see him again.
What did you do with him?
That should have been done long ago.
What? What have you got there?
A knife. And it's quite sharp. Quite suited to the purpose I intended for.
You came to kill me. Did my mother put you up to this?
No. As a matter of fact, your stepmother is in town right now. We two are quite alone.
I see.
You've always hated me, haven't you, Howard?
Yes, sir.
I suppose you can't help it. Your stepmother's a very beautiful woman.
She has nothing to do with us.
Makes very little difference. The fact of the matter is that you become dangerously psychopathic. I want you to know that I've taken steps to have you confined.
Oh, so that's the game, sir. You're going to kill me and tell the authorities you were protecting yourself from a homicidal maniac.
I'm glad you're aware of your disadvantages.
But you're not aware of yours.
A gun.
Did you murder my father?
Are you going to...
Did you kill me?
Who's speaking?
Answer me. Did you murder me?
Who are you? What are you?
Answer me.
Yes, I'll answer you. I'll kill you.
Don't. Speak before you die. Did you murder me in my sleep? I have got to know now.
Murder you.
Did you? Did you?
But he never spoke again. My father, using my body, had murdered him.
Howard, have you seen Dale?
Yes, Mother.
Where is he?
Come in. He's in here.
Howard, you murdered him.
Yes, when he tried to throw that knife at me, you see, he still has it in his hand.
Howard.
Don't try to get away.
Let me out of here.
No, Mother.
And don't call me Mother. You're no son of mine. You're a murderer.
Yes, Mother, but less of a murderer than you are. At least I killed in self-defense. Not when my victim was asleep, helpless, and unaware of danger.
Let me out of here.
No, you're going to stay. Yes, this gun. The same gun I used to murder your husband. Stay just where you are.
Why?
Because I want you to see this man who succeeded my father. This creature whom you love. Look at him there, Mother. Twisted grotesquely into the whining coward he proved himself to be in death. Look at him. This is the man you gave up my father for! This is the man you committed murder for!
Let me go.
Now, look! This is the man who used his last breath to betray you!
Betray me?
Yes!
How?
He said that you killed my father!
I?
Yes!
It's a lie!
Is it, Gilda?
William.
Is it?
Yes, I didn't murder you.
I mean to know the truth. Do not think this is some trick played by my son. I am William. I know things which only you and I in all the world know.
Stop.
Tell me the truth.
Don't point that gun at me.
Your only chance is to tell me the truth.
Will you? Will you let me live?
It will depend on what you tell me.
Then why should I tell you?
Because I am your husband. Who once loved and trusted you, Gilda. Tell me. Tell me now, or you will die.
Very well. I did it. I committed the murder. That's what you wanted to hear, is it? That's what you wanted me to tell you, is it?
It is what I wanted to know.
What are you going to do?
What do you think I should do?
Let me live. I've loved you. I've always loved you. It wasn't my fault. He put me up to it. Now that he's dead, I realize what I've done.
Do you?
Yes. Let me live. Let me live.
Perhaps I shall, Mother.
Howard. Oh, you understand, don't you? It's just as it happened with you and your father. So it happened with Dale and myself. You won't do anything to me, will you? I'm not your real mother, I know, but I have loved you, Howard. You know I've loved you. And I still love you.
Tell me one thing. Was he as guilty as you?
Yes. Yes, it was really all his fault.
Then come with me, Gilda. We're going to the police. And that's what happened, Inspector. She finally confessed. And I brought her here.
Have you anything to say, ma'am?
Yes, Inspector.
Well?
Everything I told my stepson, every word of my confession, was a lie.
Mother!
This boy's insane. He's been out of his mind ever since his father was murdered. I only made that confession to humor him and save my life. And I can prove what I say. More than one doctor has found him unbalanced.
I believe you, ma'am.
Inspector, you can't. This woman murdered my father, she told
me. We know who murdered your father, son. It was not this woman. He picked up a man yesterday. He confessed, gave us all the details. They all checked with the evidence. His name is Ralph Stone, criminal with a long record. And he murdered your father for money.
Then it wasn't my mother.
No, it wasn't your stepmother, no. But it was her husband, Dale Burton. We learned that he hired this Ralph Stone to commit the murder.
Then I was right.
My father knew what he was doing when he made me pull that trigger.
I wonder, son. Because you're under arrest for murder. I kept telling them that I didn't murder Dale Barton. I didn't pull that trigger. It was my father who murdered him. They don't believe me. But it has to be right, you see. How could father have known Dale was guilty without supernatural knowledge? My father still lives inside of me. And sometimes he talks.
Well, friend, there's nothing wrong with little old Howard. Just a little bit nuts, but who isn't? And how'd you like someone to possess you someday? Just think, you could lead a double life for the price of a single. In fact, you may be able to save money because, as everybody knows, two can live cheaper than one. Which brings us to the moral of tonight's story, taken from the croonings of Nature Girl, who warbles, "Don't drop dead except in bed, otherwise you can break your head."
It's common knowledge, I suppose, that jittery nerves can help to cause a miserable headache. And it's almost as well known, I think, that Bromo Seltzer can help a headache in short order, even when that headache is accompanied by jangled nerves or stomach upset. Because Bromo Seltzer not only helps the headache, but helps calm the jumpy nerves and stomach upset at the same time. The makers of Bromo Seltzer have just received a letter from Mrs. Helen A. Haas of Mount Vernon, New York, in which she said,
"I've used Bromo Seltzer many times. As director of a children's dramatic school, many times jumpy nerves bring on a headache. But thanks to your fine product, a headache no longer creates a problem."
Thank you, Mrs. Helen Haas. You pointed out once again what millions of smart men and women know. Bromo Seltzer fights a headache quickly and helps calm jumpy nerves, too. What's more, it's so pleasant tasting, it's actually refreshing. Caution, use only as directed. If headaches persist or recur, see your doctor. But for ordinary headaches,
fight headache three ways.
Well, it's time to close that squeaking door for another 7-day rest. Until next week at this time, when Bromo Seltzer brings you another Inner Sanctum mystery directed by Hyman Brown. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Report for a Corpse by Henry Kane. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
Okay, so there were no demons in that show. But that Bromo Seltzer commercial gave me a demon of a headache. I guess that's one way to sell products, create an affliction, then hawk the cure. I should say here that the presence of these spots in these old shows in no way reflects any commercial or underwriting relationship between this show or station and those products or services, nor should they be taken as an endorsement of them. They are left in to enhance the historical experience for you, the listeners. And sometimes, they're just funny without really meaning to be.
Lights out, everybody. It is later than you. This is Arch Obler bringing you another in our series of Stories of the Unusual. And once again, we caution you, These lights out stories are definitely not for the timid soul. So we tell you calmly and very sincerely, if you frighten easily, turn off your radio now. But if you're fascinated by the mysterious, the fantastic, the unearthly, then anticipate chills in our story of Poltergeist.
Open sleigh. Hey, that was swell. Now let's go to town. St. Louis woman with her diamond ring. Kicking that man around.
No, stop that, Kay.
What's the matter? Am I scaring the horse?
Oh, it seems like a sacrilege singing a song like that out here. This beautiful, clean snow and blue sky.
Well, what's wrong with a hot song to keep us warm? If you think the St. Louis blues is going to dirty up the snow, you ought to hear Frankie and Johnny the way I sing it.
Oh, stop it, Kay. You're not funny at all. Why can't you enjoy the fresh air without that cabaret sort of thing?
Oh, just an old-fashioned gal, eh, Florence? How about you, Edna? Don't you like my songs either? You haven't said anything for the last 5 minutes.
Well, I haven't been listening to you, to tell the truth. I love to watch the snow sort of flow along under the sleigh.
When you say that, gal, smile. Gosh, did you ever see more snow in your life?
The man at the hotel said it had been snowing on and off up here for 2 weeks.
I think coming out here to the country is the best thing we three have done since we started rooming together. Hiking in the snow is terribly healthy.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. The healthier I get, the worse I feel.
Crazy idiot.
She does say the funniest things, doesn't she? I always say that Kay ought to...
Whoa!
Hallelujah, we're here.
Is this as far as we go, driver?
That's right, miss. Can't go no further down this road account of the drift.
Oh, my goodness. The drifts are too deep for a horse. How can we walk through them?
I second the motion.
Well, you young ladies don't have to worry none so long as you keep going down the valley over there. Snow ain't piled up that way all the way to Ma Jenkins.
Oh, well, that's marvelous. Come on, girls. Let's get started.
So long. Take care of yourselves, girls.
Come on, Ed.
Goodbye, Mr. Hotel. Well, listen to the snow talking at us.
It's very dry snow. Our feet rub particles of it together, and the friction makes a sound.
It's kind of scary, isn't it?
Why?
Oh, I don't know. It's just as if the snow was sort of trying to talk to us. I mean, as if it was angry at our trespassing.
Hey, don't tell me we're trespassing. I don't want any country squire taking any pot shots at my constitutional amendment with rock salt. No, thank you.
Oh, don't talk nonsense, Kay. We're not trespassing. Why, this pass through the valley here over to Mrs. Jenkins' house is the favorite hike of everyone who comes up this way during the winter.
What's Mrs. Jenkins got anyway that makes people walk their feet off?
Wait till you taste her cooking.
Eat. Oh, boy, let's go.
It's awfully quiet out here, isn't it?
Oh, that's the glory of it. I've had the roar of the subway in my ears so long. Okay, don't walk so fast.
Come on, look what I found.
Oh, come on, Edna.
Oh, please, let me take your arm. I'm getting out of breath.
Well, take it easy. There's no hurry. Well, what is it, Kay?
Look, through the circle of trees here. Look what I discovered.
Well, isn't that interesting? It's a sort of a natural amphitheater.
Sure. Say, who was this guy, Daniel Boone?
What's an amphitheater?
Well, that means an oval circling place with rising tiers of seats. It's, you know, like that place we went to for the horse show.
Oh.
Back in the times of the Greeks, they had outdoor theaters.
Listen to the professor.
They made use of places just like this, where the ground sloped up and made a sort of a natural arena or stage below.
Theater! That's an idea. Sit down, gals, and I'll give you a special performance of the Kay Follies.
It's awful snowy here, isn't it?
I'll trample it down with my spring dance. Welcome, sweet spring.
Isn't she a nut dancing in the snow? If I had that girl's energy.
She's really graceful, isn't she? I'll bet if she went on the stage.
Oh,
Kay.
She fell.
Kay.
Oh.
Kay, did you hurt yourself?
Oh, did I land on my dignity. Here, give me a hand.
Here, I'll help you.
There you are.
Oh, did I take a flop?
Did you hurt yourself badly?
I'll live. What in the world did I trip over? Oh, no wonder. Look at that rock under the snow. No wonder I did a nosedive.
Oh,
my
gee.
Goodness. There are rocks like that all over. Oh. A person could break their neck if they...
Girls.
What's the matter?
What is it?
K, Kay, the rock you tripped over. It's not a rock.
What are you talking about? Of course it's a rock.
Well, yes, but it's something more than that. It's a tombstone. Tombstone?
Oh, no, it can't be.
Look for yourself. It says, here lies buried the remains of one who, restless in life...
Stop! Don't read any more. Stop!
And all these other stones laying flat on the ground. They're tombstones, too?
Yes.
Whew, what a place to picture dance.
Oh!
What's the matter, Edna?
What did you scream for?
Kay, you danced on the grave.
What?
You danced on the grave. I saw you. I saw you do it. You danced on the grave. Okay.
Edna, stop it. Stop it.
Oh, what's come into her? Edna, stop acting
Edna,
like
stop,
that.
For heaven's sake. Control yourself.
Okay. Kay, I'm so sorry for you. You danced on a grave.
For heaven's sake, stop talking like that. Sure, I danced on a grave.
Well, yes, of course you did. It was perfectly accidental.
And what if it was? What of it?
The poltergeist.
The what?
Edna Hansen, what are you talking about? What's that word you just used?
Poltergeist. Okay, what have you done?
You superstitious little fool. If you don't stop talking that way, I'm going to slap your face. What's the matter with you? I didn't do anything.
You walked on the grave. You danced on the grave.
Edna, be sensible. We all walked on graves, but it was purely accidental.
Yeah.
We had no intention of desecrating them.
It doesn't matter, I tell you. It doesn't matter. The poltergeist. He'll come. I know he will.
Oh, what's the use? She's crazy.
Edna, what are you talking about? What's a poltergeist? What are you so frightened about?
My father, he told me. If you walk on a grave, if you dance on a grave, the poltergeist.
Poltergeist what? What is a poltergeist?
An evil spirit. It comes out of the grave. It kills. It destroys. It'll kill us. It'll kill us all.
Stop it.
Throw things
oh,
out.
Oh, please. Lay
it'll
off that way.
Edna.
But it won't get me. I'll run
Edna,
away.
Come back here.
She's gone insane. I'll get her. Edna.
Can't catch her.
Edna. Edna, don't run away. Nothing will hurt you. Nothing. Oh, Edna, look out. Kay, what happened? That stone. It hit Edna.
Edna. Edna, open your eyes.
Blood. Blood all over her face. Kay, who threw that stone? Who threw it?
I don't know. It came from the graveyard.
Now, girls, take it easy. Take it easy.
Oh, doctor, she won't die. Tell me she won't die.
No, no, of course not.
And you're sure that her skull isn't fractured?
Oh, absolutely not. Maybe a little concussion, that's all.
Well, it's almost 5. Our train. Can we get someone to help us carry her down to the station so we can get her on board?
Board? I'm telling you, that little friend of yours shouldn't be moved out of bed for a week. If you do... Well, it might be just too bad.
Oh, Flo, what'll we do? You go home, Kay. I'll stay with her. Oh, no, you won't. I'm not leaving you here alone in this godforsaken place. If you stay, I stay too. Kay, please be sensible. Why should we all lose our jobs when you...
If you'll excuse me, you ladies, I've got to be on my way.
Oh, yes, of course, Doctor. Is there anything more you can do for Edna, Doctor? Any medicine or something?
Nope, I've done all I can do. She's sleeping comfortable now. Miss?
Yes, Doctor?
The constable's sick, too, you know, and he's sort of depending on me to keep things straight. Now, just how did you say that little friend of yours got hurt?
Well, it was just the way we explained, Doctor. That rock came flying and...
Yes, yes, I know, but who threw the rock?
We don't know.
What?
That's true, Doctor. We don't know.
But somebody threw it. You can't change facts. Somebody threw the rock that cracked her head.
For heaven's sakes, old man, you don't think we did it?
No, okay, miss, I didn't.
Excited. Doctor, you've got to believe us. It happened just the way we said. All at once, that rock came flying through the air from the direction of the graveyard. It struck Edna, and we just didn't see who threw it.
All right, if that's your story. Well, you better stay in your rooms here. I mean, you better not be leaving until the constable's on his feet and has a chance to talk with you. I'll be back in a few hours and see how the girl is.
He doesn't believe us.
What difference does it make? We know what we saw.
But what did we see?
She was running. She fell.
Kay?
Well?
Let's not fool ourselves.
There was no one there to throw that rock.
There must have been.
But there wasn't.
Stop saying that!
Aren't you brave enough to face facts? There wasn't any place for anyone to hide. I saw that stone. It seemed to come down out of the air. So slowly.
Florence, if you don't stop talking like that...
You remember what... What Ed said? It throws things.
Stop looking at me like that. You're giving me the jitters.
She said the poltergeist throws things. Spirit of evil.
Florence, Rob, have you gone crazy too?
Why should we laugh at things like that? What right have we got to laugh? How do we know there aren't powers we can't see or understand? Powers of evil that revenge and insult just like an evil man. Kay, how do we know?
What are you talking like that for? What are you trying to scare me for? You're supposed to be the most intelligent one of us all. You with your college degrees. Sure, I danced on the grave. But the dead are dead and they can't revenge a thing. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of anything. I tell you, stop. What?
It's Edna.
Come on.
Edna, we're coming to you. Don't be afraid. We're coming.
Open the door, Florence. It's not locked.
Doc, it won't.
Here, let me. Edna, what is it? What?
Edna, what? On your head. Oh.
Hey, what's going on here? I run a decent place, and I don't want you...
The girl on the bed. Her head. It's crushed flat in by a rock. God in heaven. It's not a rock. It's a tombstone.
I wish I could cry, but I haven't got any more tears.
Oh, Edna. Edna.
Florence, darling, please. You'll kill yourself if you keep on like that. Oh, if this horrible night would only end.
It was my fault. Mine. I was the one who got her out here. She didn't want to go. She hates the country. But I made her come. I made her.
No, you're not the one to blame. I am. I danced on the grave.
But she was so good. So sweet. Oh, why is it after me, Edna? Why?
You're right. It wasn't right for it to be her, was it?
Oh, no.
I did it, not her. I did it. I danced on the grave. I danced.
Can't deny what you see with your own eyes.
But I tell you, Doc, nobody could have carried that tombstone up the steps without me seeing him, could they?
But there it is, ain't it?
Yeah. There it is.
Either somebody's playing a terrible joke or...
You don't have to say it, Doc. I know.
It's just the trouble. You don't know, and I don't know, and nobody knows.
Yeah. And that tombstone.
Well, what about the tombstone?
I ain't quite sure, but that's a tombstone out of the old burying grounds up at the bend.
You're crazy.
No, I ain't either.
Well, that place is a good 3 miles from here.
Yeah. I know.
Who could have carted a heavy stone like that for 3 miles?
Yeah. Who?
Stop looking like that, you flap-eared old fool. Human hands carried that stone in here and killed that girl?
Sure.
Yeah, the constable will find out who did it the minute he's on his feet again. You wait and see.
No, he won't, Doc. You're smarter than me and all that, but... Oh, this time you're wrong. There ain't nobody that takes in breath and leaves out breath like you and me. Or the constable's gonna find out who killed that girl. You know that, Doc.
Oh, stop talking.
I've been sitting here listening to it. I can't stand it anymore. I'll stop it.
Why bother with it?
Come on to bed, Kay. Please. There's no use sitting there. It won't help her.
Yeah. Nothing can help her. But maybe I can help you.
Me?
It was my fault. Mine. I was the reason it happened. It killed her, and it'll kill you and me, too, unless I stop.
No, don't say that.
It's true. But why should you be hurt? I'm to blame, not you. Listen, Flo. I'll go out there.
There?
Out there to the graveyard.
What?
I'll talk to her.
Kay.
I'll tell her I didn't mean to do it.
No.
But I didn't know where I was dancing.
Please.
Maybe somehow it'll hear. Listen to me, and then it won't hurt
oh,
you.
No, I won't let you go out there. It'll kill
but
you.
Florence.
It'll kill you, too.
But Florence.
No, I'll hold you. You can't go. You can't.
All right.
Come on to bed, Kay, please. In the morning, things will be different.
But it won't.
Nothing will hurt us. And then they're right outside the door. They won't let anything get at us. Oh, please, Kay, please come to bed.
Yeah.
We'll pray.
Pray? I don't exactly know how.
Just say anything. Anything. Like this. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Now you.
If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
Kay, are you asleep? I can't sleep anymore. Kay, tomorrow, I mean when it gets light and everything, do you think people will believe us? Do you think so, Kay? I'm not quite sure what happened. I always used to be so sure about things. And now I... Kay? Kay, where are you? Kay, where... The window. She went out the window. She's gone out there. To the graveyard. To talk... to it. Okay, why did you go? Why did you go? I'll go out there, too. Well, she'll be so frightened out there alone. I'll go, too. I'll go, too. Oh, so cold. Hands. Nose so sharp. Cutting my legs. Oh, why did you go out there, Kay? Why did you... I've got to find you. The wind. Oh, why doesn't the wind stop? Blow, thou winter wind. Thou art not so unkind as... Oh, I've got to find you, kid. I've got to find you. It's snowing. I love snow. Edna didn't like snow. Where are you, Kay? Where are you? I lost my way. I lost the road. Where are you, Kay? Kay, where are... Oh, Kay. I heard you, Kay. I heard you. I'm coming to you, Kay. We'll talk to it. We'll talk to it together. We'll tell her we didn't mean any harm, won't we, Kay? Won't we? Poor Edna. We can't help her, Kay. We can't help Edna. But I'm coming to help you, Kay. I'm coming. I'm coming. Yes, I hear you. I hear you. I'm coming, darling. I'm coming to help. I'm coming to help you. I'm coming. I'm coming. I hear you. I hear you calling my name. I hear you.
This way, here we are, Florence. This way, Florence.
Yes.
Here we are.
Yes, I hear you. I hear you. Where are you? Where are you? No! No!
This way, Hooper. They must have come this way.
Climbing out the window like that in the middle of the night. They must have gone crazy, the both of them.
Let's not worry about that now. We've got to find them. Here, give me that lantern.
What is it, Doc? What have you found?
A shoe. One of the girl's shoes.
My gosh, stuck in the snow. We're going the right way.
Come on, move fast. We've got to get to them.
Doc, look at this.
What is it?
Over there. Ain't these footprints?
Yes. Yes. Yes, that's right. Footprints. Hello, up ahead. Hello.
Doc, we're getting pretty close to the old burying grounds.
Well?
Maybe. Oh, look here, Doc. Let's not be fools. Let's wait till morning.
What? Let those frightened girls freeze to death? Get along.
But, Doc, I...
You come with me, or the whole town will know what a yellow-livered no-good you are.
All right. All right. You don't have to get so sore, Doc.
Hello? Hello? Anybody up there? Hello?
Doc. Doc, look.
What?
There they are. Up ahead.
Glory be, they're alive. The both of them. Come on.
Doc. Doc, look at them. That's the burying ground up there. And they're dancing. Dancing on the graves.
But they must be out of their heads. Come on, we've got to stop.
Doc! Doc, wait for me. Oh, Doc, it's Doc again. Where are they, Doc? Where are the girls? Have they stopped dancing?
Yes.
Huh?
They've stopped dancing. Did they ever dance?
What are you talking about, Doc? We saw them. We saw them dancing in this place with our own eyes.
Did we? The moonlight. Here it comes again. See with your eyes again.
Oh, no.
Both of the girls froze stiff to the ground. Each with her head crushed by a tombstone. Mr. Obler, would you mind telling us, me, whether there actually are such things as poltergeists?
All I can tell you is this. There are authenticated records in existence that, in the city of London on the 27th day of April, 1872, from 4 in the afternoon on a Thursday until half past 11 at night, a certain room in a certain house was deluged by stones thrown from no apparent source. The London police surrounded the house, but they found no trace of whoever or whatever was throwing those stones with a murderous violence.
I see. So much for Poltergeist. Lights Out, written and directed by Arch Obler, will come to you again next Tuesday at the same time.
Lights Out was conceived in the fall of 1933 by the writer Willis Cooper. The first series of these shows were only 15 minutes long and ran on a local NBC station, WENR, at midnight on Wednesdays starting in January of 1934. In April, the series went to half an hour. By January of 1935, the shows were discontinued, but were brought back by a huge popular demand a few weeks later. After a successful tryout in New York City, the series was picked up by NBC in April of 1935. They were then broadcast nationally, usually late at night and always on Wednesdays. Willis Cooper stayed with the program until June of 1936, when Arch Obler took over. The show Poltergeist was first aired on December 16, 1936. You are listening to KSOW 10.67, low power FM in beautiful Cottage Grove, Oregon. We're going to have a brief musical interlude here. This is Big Claude Thornhill and his orchestra playing Robin's Nest, which, as near as I can figure, was recorded in 1947.
The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, bring you Dimension X. The civilization of the galaxy spread across 200 million worlds. The black void of space swarmed with the ships of the Empire. But far off the trade routes, almost forgotten, lay the dying planet Earth. A backwater in galactic culture, a place of exile, a pebble in the sky.
I landed on Earth, on the one spot which I would have called civilized. A patch along the desolate heights of the Himalayas that surrounded the palace of the Imperial Governor of Earth.
Dr. Bell Avedon of Sirius Sector. That's a familiar name.
Perhaps you've seen it in the Galactic Archaeological Journal, my Lord Ennis.
Me? No, no. I'm a soldier, not a scientist. It was a newspaper article. You gave an interview about your expedition to Earth. I suppose you want to start digging. Whatever can you find on this miserable heap of rubble?
I don't consider Earth a miserable heap, my Lord. It's absolutely unique in the galaxy.
Unique?
It's the only inhabited planet that is radioactive.
It's a pig pen.
Yes, I know. But this planet is inhabited. Biologists have proven that on a radioactive world, high forms of life cannot develop.
High forms? The rest of the galaxy hates the Earthmen, and they return it with interest.
I don't think you understand. I'm not intolerant of anyone. And that even includes Earthmen. My theory is that life on Earth originated before it was radioactive.
Ah. There's a story like that in the Earth lore of the ancients.
I know, I've read it.
Oh? I wouldn't admit that here if I were you, Dr. Avedon. It's forbidden for outsiders to read it. The Earthmen get pretty violent about their religion.
Do you mean the Imperial police power here is defective?
It is, in case of sacrilege. Well, now, what do you actually want to prove?
That man originated in prehistoric times on Earth before space travel and spread to the other planets.
What? Are you seriously suggesting that at one time Earth was the only inhabited planet and that man descended from Earthmen?
There's a chance it might be so.
You'll change your mind when you see them, Doctor. I'm not an anti-terrestrial, but as far as I can see, they're lazy and ignorant and generally inferior to us. I'm as liberal as the next man, but it's a fact. Once an Earthman, always an Earthman.
I booked passage to the city of Chica on an Earth line. My fellow passengers seemed ordinary enough, but I was conscious of being alone among Earthmen. I beg your pardon. Could you tell me what's going on there?
Sure. You see that couple? They've been married 40 years. It's their anniversary.
Yes, sir. 40 years. Hey, Mother? It seems like yesterday. Just like yesterday.
Hey, when are you folks scheduled for the 60th?
In a month. 16th of November.
Well, I hope you have a nice day for it. My father reached his 60 in a pouring rain. Kept complaining we were getting soaked. So I told him, what are you complaining about, Dad? I've got to come back.
Now, this 60 they're talking about, are they referring to their 60th birthday?
Sure. That's when they put you away. Euthanasia. It's a custom. Can't have people living on and eats up all the food. That's right, isn't it, Pop?
Yes, sir. Mother's coming with me when I reach the 60. She's not due for a couple of months, but she thinks we might as well go together.
Yeah, that's the spirit. There's many a man living past the 60. Sneaks, stealing the food from the next generation. A guy should go when it's his time.
Yes, but suppose
it's only fair to... Hey, where are you from?
I beg your pardon?
Asking all them questions.
Yes. Who are you? A spy? Where are you from?
I'm Bell Avedon from Baron, Sirius Sector.
Oh, an outsider, huh?
Come on, we go forward. Did you hear that, Mother? An outsider.
I burned with indignation. Earthmen treating me like an outcast. Earthmen. When we landed, I followed my intention of observing the human animal, subspecies Earth, in its native habitat. In this case, a large department store. Perhaps I resembled a floor walker, for a young Earth girl came up to me and asked a question.
Pardon me. It's my father. He's about 5'4". He wears eye lenses. I think he had on a brown coat.
I'm afraid I don't remember seeing anyone.
But they followed me here. I've got to find him.
Are you in trouble, miss?
No. No, it's nothing, really. I'm sorry I bothered you.
Attention. Attention, please.
What's that?
All patrons of the store will kindly leave by the 5th Street exit. This store is being evacuated for radiation fever quarantine.
What's all this about?
They're after me. It isn't really radiation fever at all.
Who's after you?
How am I going to get out of here? They'll be checking registration cards at the door.
Haven't you got one?
Yes, but it has my name on it. I don't know what to do.
Come on.
But you don't even know me.
I don't know anybody here. But you're an interesting species. Person. This way.
Share your own car. Come on. Step along. Step along. Check. Wait a minute. Hold a check.
Yes, sir.
Stand right there.
Look here, officer.
Are you with her?
Yes, but you'd better find out who I am.
Later. Stand over there. Next. Come on.
What is it now?
The Imperials.
Are you afraid of them?
Of course.
Don't worry about the outsiders, Miss Schecht. I'll handle them.
Oh, no, don't try anything. Don't talk to them at all. Just do what they say. Don't even look at them.
We'll see. Here they are.
All right, now. You, guard.
Yes, sir?
I'm Lieutenant Cloudy, Imperial Garrison. Who's got the key?
If it please your honor.
Not so close, idiot. You might be infected. I'll take over. You, Worthy. What's your name? Speak up, squaw.
Paula Schecht, sir.
Your registration papers?
Here you are, sir.
Thank you. All right, now. Pick them up. Go on.
Say, look here now.
What did you say, Earthy?
If you please, sir. This man has nothing to do with me. I never saw him before.
What did you say?
I don't like the way you treat women. And I'd advise you to improve your manners.
And where have you been brought up, Earthy? Here's lesson number one.
Why, you...
My arm! Let's go! Sergeant, Doronic Whip!
Oh, no, no!
Yes, sir.
Oh, you're all right now.
What happened?
They gave you full power in the neuronic wind.
Where are we?
The military base. Oh, you should.
Is that...
Oh.
Well, Dr. Avedon, we seem to have had an unpleasant contretemps in the city this afternoon.
Unpleasant? I should put it stronger, Colonel. As a free citizen of the Empire, I had every right to resent such illegal treatment.
I consider the whole incident unfortunate, Doctor. Don't you think it would be best to forget the whole matter?
I think not. I have an appointment in a week with the procurator.
Procurator, huh?
What do you intend doing with Miss Schecht?
What would you suggest, sir? I had...
Free her immediately. And offer her your apologies.
Of course. If the young lady will accept my sincere regrets, I will give the order for your release immediately.
I don't understand. They just turned us loose.
Of course.
You must be very important. I never heard of the outsiders being that polite to an Earthman before.
I'm not an Earthman, Paula.
What?
I'm an archaeologist from the outside.
Oh. Well, then you stood up to the soldiers because you knew it was safe all along. And I thought... Oh, I should have known.
Paula, does my not being an Earthman make me any different from 5 minutes ago?
You might have told me, sir.
You don't mind. Don't call me, sir. Don't be like the rest of them.
Like the rest of whom, sir? The rest of the disgusting animals that live on Earth?
Please.
If you'll excuse me, sir, I must leave.
Now, wait. Paula. Listen to me. Paula. I had access to the garrison files, and to satisfy idle curiosity, I indexed Paula Schecht. Her father was a Dr. Mikhail Schecht, biologist. And against his name was a black star with a notation, condemned in absentia.
charge, evading the 60. That was why she was afraid. So I sent a note asking her to meet me in the North Park after dark.
Paula, over here.
Dr. Avedon?
Sit down.
Oh, I want you to understand. I wouldn't have come except...
I understand. I've seen your father's record.
You know about it.
I looked into it, Paula. There doesn't seem to be much that can be done about the 60.
Oh, it isn't that. It's not for my father. It's for the whole galaxy.
What is it?
Earth is going to revolt.
No. All of it?
Oh, don't laugh at me.
Paula, the galaxy has a volume of several million cubic light years. It contains 200 million inhabited planets. Earth has a population of only 20 million. And no resources. What can Earth do?
I don't know, Doctor, but my father does. He's told me that Earth knows a way by which it can wipe out all outside life and... Wait.
Hmm?
Someone coming. Park Patrol. Quick, kiss me.
Hmm?
Don't be stupid. Kiss me. They won't suspect anything.
Oh, yes, of course.
They've gone. It's all right. Now come with me. I'll take you to my father.
Dr. Avedon, this is a pleasure. I have read your articles in the journal. It is hard to get copies. Our neighbors don't care to trade with Earth. It's part of the nearly insoluble problem of anti-terrestrialism.
No one seems to want a solution. Earthmen and outsiders alike?
Oh, no, that is not true. There is a way of preserving our culture and living as equals in a larger society. But the zealots don't think so.
The zealots?
Yes. They rule Earth now. They are a small minority, but they have power. They have plans.
They planned the revolt, Paula told me?
Yes.
I see. Well, why didn't you report this to the Imperial Garrison?
The Society of Earth Ancients have guarded me too well. Besides, they had a hold on me. I am 62. You know the customs of Earth.
The 60 years.
They allowed me to live on. The price was silence about the weapon.
You agreed to this?
I wanted to live.
What is this weapon?
You are aware of Earth's peculiar environment, the radioactivity?
Yes.
Over the years, we Earthmen have built up certain immunities to radiation burns, for one.
But it's a minute difference. I measured it experimentally.
Oh, but, Doctor, human life is not the only form affected by radiation and mutation. There is microscopic life, bacteria, viruses. We have been searching out such a virus, one to which Earthmen have developed a high degree of immunity, but not outsiders.
You mean a particular disease?
Yes. Common fever. It is a mild children's disease here, like chickenpox or German measles. But to outsiders, it is radiation fever. Symptoms develop in 2 hours. Lips are so badly affected that the victim cannot talk. And in 2 days, he dies.
They've isolated this virus?
Tons of it in crystalline form.
And they plan to let this loose in the galaxy?
By means of guided missiles. Then... frightened refugees will carry the disease across space. Billions will die.
You're sure about this? You have proof?
I worked on the project.
We've got to get to the procurator. I can catch the evening train at... Who is it?
I don't know.
Open up.
There should have been an alarm.
We've got to get out. Is there a back
entrance?
Open up
there.
Don't move.
Hands in front of you.
What's the meaning of this? I demand...
Shut up!
I'm a galactic citizen. You've got no right to detain me without legal authority.
I am an Earthman, but I think you'll find I am all the authority needed at this moment, Dr. Avedon. I am Balkas, the High Minister of Earth.
The High Minister? What are you doing?
I always look after distinguished visitors personally.
Avedon does not know anything.
I doubt that, Dr. Schecht. We will proceed now to the Hall of Correction.
You can't do this. When the procurator...
The procurator will hear nothing until it is too late. The guided missiles will be fired tonight at 12.
guard if they make a false move. Keep them covered, guard.
Right. Paula, can you scream?
What
are you... There, coming down the street. Imperial Patrol.
Oh, it's no use.
Do what I say. Scream. Go ahead.
Guard! Don't move there!
Hold it. They're outsiders. You're right. That's the Imperial Patrol.
All right, Irving. What's going on here?
Good morning, Sergeant.
Sir? Irving?
You don't understand. I'm Baucus, the Lord High Minister of Earth.
Listen, Irving, I don't care who you are. What's going on?
Yes, sir. We've arrested these people.
What charge?
Blasphemy.
All right, get moving.
Thank you.
Sergeant.
What do you want, Irving?
I'm a galactic citizen. I demand the right...
You? May we proceed, sir?
Listen, Sergeant. I have something more to say to you.
What?
This.
Wait. No Earthy is going to get away with this.
Get a squad car!
But, Sergeant, I'm the Lord Minister of Earth.
Tell him about it at the Imperial Barracks. Now move, all of you. Before I give you a shot of the whip.
I tell you, I'm a citizen of the Empire.
Listen.
I can prove it. You'll get into a lot of trouble if you don't believe me.
I'll admit no Earthy would dare spit in my face.
It was the only way I could get to the garrison. I insist on seeing the officer of the day.
I sent for him. You better have a good story. Attention!
That is. Which one of you claims he's a citizen of the Empire?
I am.
Barrett's the one from the store.
You, eh? The smart louse that broke my arm. Well, well, well.
I've got to see the colonel, Lieutenant.
Now, Dr. Avedan, I could hardly do that unless it's important.
It is important. It's life and death for the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Come here. Closer. Oh, it's too bad I've got to save you for the colonel.
What?
He'll see you at 5:30, his orders.
You knew all along.
Sure. Come on, Earthy lover.
I'm afraid you're in serious trouble, Dr. Avedan. The man you're accusing is the High Minister for Earth.
I know, but I have proof.
Well?
I can only speak to the Procurator. You've got to contact him.
There are channels, Dr. Avedan.
We haven't time for channels. I have the details of the plot from Dr. Schecht. You've got to let me speak to the Procurator.
I've already advised him of your arrest. He's flying in. You had better be able to prove what you say. If you don't, we'll have to hand you back to the native authorities and their courts, none notoriously savage.
Well, Avedan, I've called you here with His Excellency, the High Minister for Earth.
My lord, this man is behind the whole plot.
Is he?
There's no time to lose. I've explained to you about the virus. They're shooting off the guided missiles at 12. You've got to take action.
Well, Your Excellency. My lord, if this man has any evidence...
You admitted it this afternoon.
Well, you have no witness to that.
Ask Dr. Schecht. He worked on the virus.
I wouldn't say that Schecht lied, my lord, but he is a criminal wanted for evading the 60, and some men will invent any story to avoid death.
The deadline is midnight. You've got to bomb those temples where the launching sites are.
Perhaps I can explain. According to my information, Dr. Avedan seems to have succumbed to a certain Earth girl, the daughter of the unfortunate Dr. Schecht. Is this true, Avedan?
What has that got to do with it? There isn't any time. You've got to do...
Dr. Avedan, are you in love with that girl?
Yes, yes. Will you listen to
me? I don't think we need pursue this any further. Your Excellency, I shall order you released with an apology.
No.
Dr. Avedan, I can hardly believe a degenerate who fraternizes with Earth women.
You scum, you pot-bellied scum.
I warn you, Avedan, you're in trouble enough.
I'm in trouble. You fool, you stupid, blind, bigoted fool. You're destroying the galaxy. You're murdering them all. But before I die, I'll have the pleasure of smashing your fat, oily face in the...
Let me go. Guard!
Get the whip!
Oh!
1:30. Past the deadline. It's all over. Lord Ennius released the High Minister with an apology.
Doesn't matter. The Empire can wipe Earth out. It won't save any lives. The virus must have been spread here, too. Earthmen are immune, but outsiders...
Yeah. You're an outsider.
Yes.
Oh.
I am. We're paying, Paula. The rest of us. Paying for centuries of intolerance.
Oh, Bill.
Look out there. Through the bars. The night sky. Pinpoints of light. The Empire. Doomed.
Oh, Bill. Bill, don't.
I was just thinking. I came to Earth to prove a theory that man started here. That once in prehistoric times, Earth was the only populated world of the galaxy. It's funny. Now it will be that way again. Man living only on Earth. They'll forget the science, the machinery of the Empire. They'll forget the stars. There will be only Earth, alone in the universe. A pebble in the sky.
The children of tomorrow will play with toys. But what will those toys be like? An ordinary clerk in an ordinary job finds a terrifying answer to that question next week as Dimension X brings you Child's Play. Dimension X is transcribed each week by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of the magazine Astounding Science Fiction. Today, Dimension X has presented Pebble in the Sky, dramatized for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Santos Ortega as Averdon and Susan Douglas as Pola. Your host was Norman Rose, music by Bert Berman. Dimension X is produced by William Welch and directed by Edward King.
Okay, that was Pebble in the Sky. If you've read Isaac Asimov's 1950 novel, which inspired this treatment, you're probably saying to yourself, what the? Where's the main character? What happened to most of the story? Seems to me it went missing. Well, it did. While this short play was not, I think, all that bad, it wasn't Isaac Asimov's Pebble in the Sky. It takes its storyline from events and characters in the novel, but even the ending was different. Hey, I'm just saying, if you've not read the novel, don't think you've heard the story tonight.
Want to get away from it all?
We offer you... Escape! Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are making your painful way over the great India desert, alone and dying of thirst, while behind you, pursuing you, are the fanatical Kafirs, who once bowed to you as king, and now call for your life.
Tonight, we escape to India and two soldiers of fortune who pushed fate too far. As Rudyard Kipling told it in his famous story, The Man Who Would Be King. One Saturday night, it was my unpleasant duty to put the paper to bed alone. It was a pitchy black night, as stifling as a night can be in India in June. It was very still, save for the ticking of the clock above my desk.
which seemed to shatter the black heat of the night as the hands crept toward 3 a.m. And then from the passage outside my door, I heard voices. Yeah. Who's there?
Only us.
And who are you?
Oh, so you don't remember us, eh?
No, I can't.
How about the job per quarter, then?
Job per border?
Yeah, and having the authorities turn us back for impersonating newspaper men.
Newspaper
men?
And
then there was the train. Yeah, off of which you had a throne, if I remember correct.
Oh, wait. That flaming red hair. That bald head. Oh, Daniel Dravis and Peachy Carnahan.
The same.
Well, what do you two want this time? If it's money, I haven't got it. And if it's a fight, it's too beastly hot.
You can rest yourself easy, sir. Because we have come asking for naught except some information.
We've been all over this country. And we've concluded that India isn't big enough for such as Daniel and me.
So, we are going away to be kings.
Kings in our own divine right.
What? Aye. We shall be king.
Yeah, we've signed a solemn contract. Each to help the other, and neither of us to look at liquor or women until we have become king.
I've never heard of such a fantastic idea. Well, what do you want of me?
What but a look at such maps of Kafiristan as you might have about.
Maps of Kafiristan?
That's where we decided to go.
Well, don't you realize that not one single Englishman has ever gone into the Kafiristan Mountains and lived at Mount again? You're a good deal more likely to become dead men than kings.
Yeah, well, sure.
Anyway, I don't believe you have the slightest intention of traveling a mile outside of Delhi.
Then you should come down to the Sarai Marketplace in the morning, down where the caravans leave for the north.
Now, look. Look, you two. I'm a newsman, not a nomad. Now, why should I come down to that filthy pest hole?
I'm not so sure that you're either.
What do you mean?
You say you're a newsman, but here's the chance to see the start of the greatest story of all time. And you'd pass it up.
Because you're too blasted lazy to get up that early in the morning. Come along, Dravot, my lad.
Yeah, but if you should have a change of heart, come to the Sarai in the morning and see whether we'd be liars or not.
And so they left, those two lovable scoundrels. And I sat alone in my office, thinking. The kings of Kafiristan. Kings indeed. But then, perhaps, just perhaps, they might pull it off. And it would be something to cable home. And so it was that the next morning I was making my way through the dirty, milling crowds of the Sarai marketplace.
You should not laugh at him, Sahib.
Eh?
The witless are under the protection of Allah.
Oh, quite so, boy. Quite so. Who is the fellow, anyway?
A mad priest, Sahib, who has arrived only this morning from Ajmer.
I see.
You, Sahib. Come, look at my camel. Loaded with toys to please the eye of an army.
Here, now. Go about your business. I haven't any use for toys.
These are wondrous toys indeed, Sahib. Fit for a king of Kafiristan.
What? My good lord. Daniel Dravot.
Quiet, come along. I have two camels just beyond the wall here.
The blessings of Pir Khan on the gracious Sahib. He consents to look at the poor toys of a priest from Ajmer. Over this way.
Where's Conahan?
Here we are. Permit me to present my servant, Azamir Khan.
At your service, Governor.
Well, I'm...
How do you like our disguises? Do they pass?
And if they fool this crowd in the Sarai, they're probably good enough to get you across the border. And good enough to get you killed.
Yeah, getting killed is no part of the contract Peachy and me drawed up. Although, perhaps killing fits in with our plans in a different sense. Feel around underneath the toys there in the camel bag.
What? My good lord, a rifle.
20 brand new Lee Enfields, with ammunition to match.
Yeah, and 20 good reasons to make your death certain. Any Payson of the hill tribes would kill his own mother to get a rifle.
Now, who would arm? A poor mad priest, Sahib. Allah protects me.
Mad is right.
And so was Lord Clive, and Rhodes, and Bonaparte. Drive out the camels, P.C. We have a long way to go before we become kings.
Fire!
As I stood and listened to the camel bells fade away in the distance, I wondered if it might not be a glorious thing to go to Kafiristan and be a king.
years pass in India, much as they pass in any other land. It grows hot, then the rains come, and then the heat again. Some colonel at a hill station puts down an uprising. A new viceroy comes out from London. The paper duly records the death of a sultan in Rajputana. And the trees in the courtyard grow a few feet taller. And finally, time in its circle turned up another night, much like the one 3 years before. Once again, I sat alone in the office, listening to the clock, and waiting for some unimportant item to come over the wire from Europe. It was long after midnight when my office door slowly opened. Well, I say, you might knock first, you know.
Knock? Knock?
Good Lord, man. What's wrong?
You don't know who I am, do you?
No. No, I haven't the faintest idea. Over here. You'd better sit down, old fellow. You're in a bad way.
Yes, sir. Thank you. It's a whole year I've been walking. Right here in this very office we settled it. You sitting right there and giving us the maps. Hey, and you've been sitting there ever since? 3 years.
No. Oh, no. Man couldn't change that much in 3 years. You're not teaching Carnahan.
Yes. I was the king of Kafiristan. Me and Daniel Travis. Real crown kings we was. Just as true as gospel.
And what in the name of heaven have they done to you, Peachy?
Peachy? I knew Peachy Carnahan once. He's a king. With a real golden crown on his head. Told me he does. He's dead now.
No. You're Peachy Carnahan. You are. Now you must pull yourself together.
Yeah. Pull myself. You've got to keep looking into my eyes. Then maybe everything won't go to pieces.
All right. All right. Now, tell me what happened, Peachy.
We left the caravan at Jagdala. And we struck off into the hills. Alone.
Yes. Go on.
Weeks it was to travel, Daniel and me. First there wasn't no roads, and after a while, no food. But there was always the drums. Sometimes they were close, sometimes farther off. Most of the time we could hear them somewhere.
Hello on there! Here now. It's no place to be stopping. Up with it.
Well, I'm fearing it's no use, Daniel.
What's got into them?
Well, the poor beasts are done in and starved, same as ourselves. They'll go no further.
Then we'll go on without them. I've not come this far to die on the side of a mountain.
Wait. Look, Daniel. Over the edge of them rocks.
Men they are.
A score or more of them. And one goes ahead of the rest.
In naught but bows and arrows. Make out a pair of the rifle, the pigeon.
Right you are, Daniel.
It's now that we start to become kings.
Here you are. And some cottages, too.
Easy now, Peachy. I'll drop the saddle at the rear first. Then we'll lay a few at their feet. No harm to the one in front. We may need him. Now!
Got him, by the arm! Lay off, Peachy! Hold it, Daniel. Look at him.
Ah, flat on that blooming face.
It's their leader. He's coming out alone.
Well and good. We'll go part way to meet him, Peachy. Keep your rifle by.
Look at him, Daniel. He's as fair as us, with yellow hair.
So he is. Part of the lost tribes, these people are.
Stop.
I await your command, O ye who speak with the voice of thunder.
By the Lord, Harry Peachy, we're in luck. It's the old Afghan tongue he speaks. Speak up. Who are you and whence do you come?
I am high priest and the chief of the village of Bashkai. A journey of only a few heartbeats.
This Bashkai, how many people?
They are numbered in the thousands.
There are more villages in the hills.
More than a man has fingers and toes.
You hear that, Peachy? Give our kingdom, make due order. And you? You're going to take us to Bashkai, do you understand?
I understand the voice of thunder that you speak.
Ooh, he's a smooth one, Peachy. He knows a thing or two. What's your name?
Mazur Khan
Jandaros. Yeah, it's too long. Hey, we'll call him Peachy.
He has the look about him of an old soldiering friend of ours.
silly fish.
So it does. We bestow a name on you. From now on, you'll be Billy Fish. And put this on your drum. Tell them two kings have come out of the mountaintop. Two kings that speak in words of thunder, so the earth trembles. Tell them two kings have come to Kafiristan.
You, Peachy?
Daniel? Why are you sitting out here in the dark?
I've been thinking. Man has to stop and think sometimes.
Anything special, Daniel?
Look at him, Peachy. Look at that blinking campfire that's gleaming in the dark. Like the jewels in the crown.
Yes, Daniel. You've done a fine job for sure. All 23 villages you joined together as one.
Yeah, it is the army you trained to be thankful for it. 2,000 men with a fair knowledge of better now.
Some of them's a bit green at it yet.
Yeah, they're ours now. Every man, jack, woman, and child. We own them, body and soul.
Yeah, we're kings now, Daniel. Not proper kings yet, but we will be.
Yeah, sooner than you think, Peachy.
How's that?
Now, Billy Fish told me something today that fair amazed me. These people know the craft.
You mean they're Freemasons? Daniel, it's impossible.
So help me, it's gospel true. He gives the grip and everything. It's old, the craft is. Older than the memory of man. And up here in the hills, they've been preserving it all these years. Why, some of the high priests know up through the fellow craft, but they don't know the third degree. You see it, Peachy? They don't know the third degree. But we do.
And Daniel, what is it you're fixing to do?
Do? We're going to be proper kings. We got them going and coming now. I'm going to turn the whole country into one grand lodge, raise some of the priests to third degree. And for me, I'd be the grand master of Kafiristan.
You ain't got the right to. We've never been officers in no lodge.
Right. What's a king got to do with asking for a right?
I'm against it, Daniel. It's no good to go fooling around with the craft.
You talk like an old woman. The thing'll work. I know it will. We'll make it a blooming ceremony. Regular aprons with the symbols and the marks. All for us, Peachy. The kings of Kafiristan.
Everything is prepared, Master. And the priests and the people wait.
Well, they haven't much longer delay. Yeah, now, Peachy, how do you like my apron?
It's a wondrous sight for fair, Daniel.
Made of white almond skin it is, and the master's mark with emerald studded.
The mark? You know the meaning of the mark?
That I do. What's got into you, Billy?
It is a thing that's passing strange, Master.
Yeah, strange and lavish. Come along now. Ready, Peachy?
Right with you, Daniel.
Then out we go, onto the temple steps. We'll give them what for. Not to blink an eye out, that's what we'll do. Look at them, Peachy. Right down on their blooming knees and yelling their fool heads.
Oh, it's a good thing to be a king, Daniel.
The mark. Behold the mark.
It's a sign. The promised ones have come.
Yeah, now. What's wrong with the priest, Billy?
It looks like trouble, Daniel.
No. Stand where you are, Master. They recognize the mark.
Yeah, a great stone in the floor. Why did they turn it over?
Wait.
It's the same.
There's the mark.
The promise.
Speak up, Billy Fish. What's the meaning of it?
See for yourself. Look. Daniel. Carved on the back of the stone.
Give the master's mark, all right?
And the same as the sign you wear. Only a few of the priests have known of the hidden mark on the stone.
What does it mean?
The many who have doubted you are a god doubt no longer.
And you, Billy, what do you think?
Aye, Master. I think that now it is the time for these.
Ooh, Daniel! Golden crown!
Aye, how they glitter! Fit for the brow of a king.
It's what we came for.
Here now, put them on. We'll crown ourselves in our own right. Ah, listen to them. You know something, Peachy?
We come here to be kings, and that we are, all right. But blamed if we ain't a couple of blooming gogs to boot, with a million people bowing on their knees.
Well enough, Peachy. So it was gods you became, as well as kings. But then what happened? What became of Daniel's rabbit?
Travis? I knew Daniel Travis once. He's a king now, Daniel is. Where's the golden crown? Carnahan was with him.
Peachy, try to pull yourself together now.
Yes, I'll try.
Good. Now you became kings, you and Daniel. Kings of all Kafiristan.
He was a fine figure, Daniel was. With his red head wearing that golden crown. Kept himself aloof from the people, so to speak. When he walked out in front of the temple, I fair crawled on their stomachs to worship him.
Yes, but what happened, man?
What happened? Well, I figure mostly it was winter coming up. The winds were starting up and clouds was blowing down from the north. Oh, it could blow beastly cold, that winter wind.
Who's out there? That you, Billy? I'm slammed it anyway. Here now, what's this?
I have brought you food, Master. You are the wild sheep with curry and rice.
Oh, up off your knees, girl. Bring it inside.
Thank you, Master.
Place it there. Now, you're a well-favored wench.
I do not understand.
Why are you crawling on your knees?
It's a fitting way to approach the god of Kafiristan.
Mm. What's your name, girl?
Marum of Denjab.
Marum, huh? You married?
It has not yet been my happy fortune, Master.
You afraid of me?
You are a god.
Yeah, I mean, how do I seem to you? You find me pleasing or what?
Your face is more wondrous than the noonday sun. And your look, the look of eagles.
Yeah. Well, very well. You may leave now.
Thank you, Master.
Marum, huh? Peachy. Peachy!
Oh, was you calling me, Daniel? Oh, the food's here, eh? Ah, good.
Mark that window, Tony. You know, winter's about due to strike and fill the passes with snow. There'll be little moving about before spring.
Yeah, you're right.
Peachy. I decided to take a wife.
But you can't do it, Daniel. We made a contract.
That was till we was kings. Well, kings we've been these many months.
It's no good. I'll tell you now, I'm against it.
Against it? You was against using the craft, too, but look what it's done for us.
This is different. Billy Fish will tell you no, the same as I do.
Billy Fish, there. Who's the king here, him or me? My mind's made up. 3 days from now, I shall have me a wife. And you can put it on the drums and tell every blighter out there in the hills. The kingdom of Kafiristan is going to have a queen. What's keeping her, Peachy? They should have brought her in half an hour ago.
I don't know, Daniel.
How about you, Billy Fish? You put him up to stolen oath, deliberate-like.
Certain preparations must be made, Master.
She's across the court with some of the priests. Maybe they're trying to buck her up a bit, Daniel. She thinks she's going to die, you know.
Die, indeed. Why, I
Master, know. It is against the laws of heaven for a woman to marry a god.
I'm not a god, I'm a man. You know that by now, Billy.
No. And I should not want to think so, Master. But either way, this can mean only trouble. I beg you to reconsider.
And I beg you to keep your mouth shut, Billy. I'm through waiting. I'm going over there to talk to the
Master, please.
Oh, we've got to go with him, Billy. I think it's going to mean trouble, but come on. How many men can you depend on?
No more than 20 with rifles. Most of my men are in Bashkai.
And what shall we do?
We shall have to make a run for it, I fear. We might be safe in Bashkai.
Oh, you bungling fools. Bring out the girl. Huh. Well, now, that's better. Here, girl. This is no way for a bride to behave. Oh, smile now. And give us a kiss.
Oh, the wench has bitten me.
Blood, Master. Don't let them see the blood.
Look! See the blood! It's not a god or a devil, but only a man!
Here! What is this blood?
Too late. Back, Daniel. They're coming with knives.
They can't do this. I am the king.
Let's run for it, Master. Come on, Daniel. Come on.
Confounded Eden. I'll come back and beat the blasted engine. That's what I'll do.
Yes, Daniel. Yeah, we'll be back, all right.
How much further, Billy?
Only a short way beyond this ridge, Master.
Well, so far, so good. At least them blooming drums is soft.
We're at the top, Daniel.
Yeah. And a right good climb it's been.
Right. Look. Seems the drums have come before us, Master.
Cut off. No less than 1,000 of them. Standing there quiet like. With them wicked long knives in their hands.
There'll be no getting past them, Daniel.
No. We're done for. Go back, Billy Fish. Take your man away with you. Go with him, Peachy. It's me they want. I did it. Me, the king.
No, Dan. I'm sticking with you. Billy Fish, you clear out.
I am your friend. I stay with you.
You're a good man, Billy.
You're coming now, Daniel.
You're peachy.
Forget it, Daniel. I'll forgive you. Freely, fully.
Then let them come. There be one thing they can't change, Peachy. We've been kings. Kings in our own right. Kings! And all come here and down.
It sliced open poor Billy Fish like a blooming earring, and it did. An earring in the snow and the rocks.
Good Lord, man. But you, Peachy, you got away from them.
Got away from them, did I? Oh, no. It strung me out on a tree. It drove nails right through me hands. See? But I fooled them all right. Because the morning coming, I wasn't dead. And then I made him think I'd lost me senses. And they was afraid to harm me because I was protected by Allah. Cut me down then. After a while, they let me go.
You poor devil. And what of Brevin? What happened to Daniel?
Daniel? Daniel's a king. He wears a golden crown.
No, no, now, what happened to him?
He's never left me. All them long months, walking on the road back, he kept me safe. The mountains, they danced at night, but Daniel held up his hand. Peachy came along, bent double. I never let go of Daniel's hand. He's with me now. Here in this bundle. You knew old Daniel, sir, even if it was a monoquin.
Look at him now.
Well, now you've seen that we were really
kings on be on the way. You'll pardon me, sir?
I let him go. There was little else to do. He was only hours away from his death. I sat there and stared at the bundle he had left lying on my desk. Stared as the pale shafts of dawn struck fire in a red beard. Stared at the golden crown sitting too large and heavy upon the wrinkled, mummified head of Daniel Gravett, the man who would be king.
Escape is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Tonight we have brought you The Man Who Would Be King by Rudyard Kipling, adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with editorial supervision by John Dunkel. Featured in tonight's cast were Ben Wright and Wilms Herbert, with John Daner, Peggy Weber, and Jack Crucian. Special music by Ivan Dittmar. Good night, Ben, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Okay, that was The Man Who Would Be King, from August the 1st of 1948.
Takes place in Green's Gap, a small town in the Southern Cavern District. Green's Gap Hospital, Dr. Melville speaking.
Doctor, there's been an accident out in Echo Cavern.
Accident? What kind of accident?
Two men was exploring, and they got lost last night. One's unconscious. You better come quick before he's dead.
I hope you know how to get out to Echo Cavern, Lem.
Well, Doc, being town constable and ambulance driver, I reckon I know about all there is to know about this country.
Ever been in the cavern, Lem?
Once, Doc Melville, when I was a boy. Nearly got my hide tanned off of my paw. Echo Cavern's a mighty treacherous place.
You mean it's easy to get lost in?
Yeah, not only that, Doc. It's that cavern gas,
carbon dioxide?
Yes, that's it. All of a sudden, you run into some of that stuff, and before you know it, bing, you're out.
Still, people seem to go exploring there.
More fools you be. I wouldn't go into them caverns. Leastwise, not without a dog.
A dog? What for?
Well, if a dog keels over, then you know the gas is collecting.
I'm afraid, Mr. Gatty, your friend is dead.
Yeah, poor Patsy. It was from the gas, wasn't it, Doc?
That's what it looks like to me.
Why did you go in that cavern, anyway?
Well, Patsy asked me to. He never seen a cave before.
How far did you go in?
Well, it didn't seem very far, but all of a sudden we lost our way.
Where was that?
Well, how do I know whereabouts it was if we was lost? We tried to trace our way back, but it wasn't no use. And Patsy started to get scared. You know, it's kind of funny to see a big guy like that get scared.
Yes, he is rather big, isn't he?
Yeah, 6'4". The mob used to call us Mutton Jeff.
And then what happened?
Well, I was a little scared myself. But we stuck together, you know, walking in the dark with only my flash from the car. And all of a sudden, Patsy keeled over.
From the gas?
Yeah, that's what I figured. His head hit on a rock, and I guess that just about finished him off.
Yeah. I suppose you reckon yourself pretty lucky, mister.
Yeah, sure. I figure it was only because I'm 5'3" that I got out of there alive. And the gas must have been just about a foot over my head.
Yeah? And what do you think of that, Jock Melville?
I think you'd better arrest Mr. Getty for the murder of his friend Patsy. What was the flaw in Getty's story? Do you know it? In a moment, we'll hear from Lem and Dr. Melville. But first... And now, let's see whether you're as observant as Lem and the doctor.
Hey, copper, let me put my hands down. They're tired.
When you're in Green's Gap jail, not before.
I don't get it. It was a good story. I still can't figure how you found out.
Lem tells me they used to take dogs in the cavern because the gas is heavier than air. It collects on the floor. If you really met gas, you would have keeled over first before your pal Patsy.
Well, what do you know? I tell you, nowadays in this murder racket, you need a college education.
And that was the last show for the day. I'm going home now. Good night. Good morning. I'm Gary Clinton.